Welcome back to the BIM Hero Podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about clients and how they view the world of BIM. Hello, guys. Just wanted to start off with generic introductions. So we'll go ahead and do that for both of you.
Okay, shall I start?
Yeah.
Okay. My name is Dara Kara, and I am CEO of BOEM and Work. The two companies, but they're connected in so far as one is a design studio and one is a construction. One is a technology company and one is a design and construction business.
I work on the technology business side. My background's in startup and entrepreneurship, and I've gone around the way to get into AEC from music and retail robotics, and so yeah, here I am. And I was very fascinated by Dara's approach to delivering lean construction with virtual design and construction with quantities, and that approach with hypergranular BIM. We'll go into it in more detail. And I was just showing some of this, and then as some of these kind of inquiries went on, it became apparent that we should build some software that actually allowed for some of this impressive work to actually be scaled and offered to more people.
And, just to start this off, I really want to dig into where we are in terms of clients and the world of BIM that we live in today.
Well, I'll have a go.
Go for it.
I'd say that clients are woefully uninformed. They are sold a general promise of BIM. BIM itself is a nebulous term. It can mean many things to many people. So it's like buying a pig in a poke. You really don't, if you don't know what you're buying, you're going to go home maybe happy, maybe not. Most of the time, not. You really need to understand that BIM can mean daylight studies, it could mean structural analysis, it could mean quantification. Rarely does it mean the whole thing. And the biggest problem at the heart of that is that clients don't know really the standards around BIM or what they mean. And they don't have to know them all, but the thing that is important to know is what the employer's information requirements are. And without this, you get nowhere, or it's just a lucky dip. I wouldn't even call it, I should call it an unlucky dip. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're definitely gonna not get what you were bargaining for.
Right, and do you feel like the client has to drive the process, right? Because they're the ones that set forth the standards and intent of what they want. And you have to deliver that to a design team that then delivers that to GC. And I just feel there's just not a lot of collaboration in the types of contracts that are out there across the world. Just wanted to get some thoughts on that.
Well, you got to look at, I'm gonna break that down a little bit. You mentioned collaboration. Mm-hmm. Not so much. People don't collaborate. We say, hey, we can make this work. All we got to do is collaborate. And people don't collaborate naturally. They collapse. In the Western world, by and large, it's a little bit different in Japan, but by and large, it is an adversarial situation, which is not premised, doesn't have it in its DNA to collaborate. You are meant to go to war to fight your people. And if you're not in war mode, you're not doing your job. I mean, that's pretty much the baked in stuff. So you will only collaborate if you have self-interest at heart. Mm-hmm. And how do you organize something with self-interest? So the test, I'm not trying to make this sound awful. The testing ground, the warring, the adversarial is to find the true line. Where's the line? Mm-hmm. Now that's the way it works. Now we can keep on saying collaborate, but that doesn't exist. That's mm-hmm. not real. That's really a fantasy. So keep on saying it and you keep on failing.
Yeah. And I think for both of you's perspective that you both have seen, the thing that occurs that causes a lot of the heartache in this industry is when you set forth an idea of what you want and design teams then pursue it as a whole. They give an idea in the form of a picture, of what they think from the context of what has been given from a client space. And they win that off of that. But the sad reality from the GCs or the subs is they had no input on what they provided in that picture. Do you actually get that in the end? Mm-hmm. And it's that consequence that then this, you know, the ugly nature of the business comes, and here comes the big bad GC and says, you can't afford that.
Well, wait, he doesn't even have to say that.
Yeah.
The thing is, okay, it's quite, you ask questions that seem simple, but yeah. Actually, when you break them down, they're quite complex. So, you have to understand the background of BIM, the background of CAD, the background of how it all came in, and why architecture started producing CGIs first to give an image of what the model was, to give a leap of imagination to what your building was about. And it's about each individual's design discipline's projection. So from a architect's point of view, and I'm just going to be broad here, so don't take it too, well, you could take it literally if you want to there. The projection generally is they're hiring me for my genius in looking at what this building and this space arrangement will be. That's what I do. That's what I've been taught to do. That's my real mission in life. Architecture is quite broad.
Off of the narrative that you have provided, that this is the basis of design that I'm going for now, you know, go do that,
right?
To produce it.
And the client wants that. It wants a nicely designed building.
Of course.
But it doesn't want it to break the bank.
I think that's a challenge.
It's a challenge, but it's a conversation that is, you have to understand what you're buying. Mm-hmm. And if the architect believes he's delivering that, then he feels he's done his job. But his job is not to make sure that the engineer comes up with a cost-effective solution, right, or that the contractor is able, that's not in his remit, unless you make it in his remit. So unless you're saying that's in your remit, go speak to the engineer, make sure that the cost is low if you want to deliver this beautiful thing that you've sold me on in this digital format. That digital format is no more than the ability to paint a pretty picture. And now you have Midjourney and other AIs that can paint that picture for you, where you don't need the architect necessarily to conjure that image. I mean, you're going to lose a lot in translation too.
Of course, but, yeah.
There it is.
What's your thoughts on that?
I think I have a very different, vantage point, because I'm not somebody who's been in construction for decades. I'm not somebody who actually is at the pointy end of delivering construction on site. Mm-hmm. But I have been somebody who has been introduced to BIM and the promise of BIM, and had to do a lot of inquiry. And that's where that inquiry started with, speaking with architects and speaking with other stakeholder participants within the BIM process, and understand, like, you know, what are the limitations, or what are the advantages, or, you know, what is best practice? And, you know, a few years ago when I first took those steps and began that inquiry, was saying, I was just confused by the kind of amount of different perspective within the space, and you know, the acronyms and the way that people describe things that other people have a different take on, and it gets confusing. You know, if you're an outsider, it took me a while to just grasp what are these points that people keep talking about. You know, it really took me a while to understand what is BIM, what is Revit, what is ARCHICAD, what is a CDE.
And we still ask those questions as industry professionals.
Yeah, but probably too much. Because too many people give the two conflicting, competing answers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ultimately, if you're doing that, there's, what is it? Is it right or wrong? Is it on a spectrum? Is it just like this kind of murky, like, there isn't a right or wrong? But there clearly is, mm-hmm. You know, because ultimately BIM is about building information modeling.
Yes.
And that can happen graphically, non-graphically. And if you coordinate information at the top of the tree and you ask for that information and it gets provided in the right way, and you put it where it can be used by everyone, it doesn't matter if you use Revit, ARCHICAD, it doesn't matter if you purely tie it down to 2D or PDFs, whatever. But I've been confused as to where why don't people, and specifically a client, demand information, you know? And because I challenge Dara sometimes, I say,
why don't they press? How
do you get the information? He said, the information's given to you. And so then I'm like, now I really don't get it. Like, and I didn't get it before. So then now I'm in this kind of don't get it squared position. And that's like really uncomfortable and possibly the worst place to be.
Yeah, which leads me to the point is, should the client actually press for BIM to be used on their project? And do they start with the end in mind?
I would say, you know, you don't need BIM at all. You don't, you know, if you don't know how to specify it, don't get it, because it's not going to do you any good. It's going to add a layer of complexity. The thing that you really want to look at is, if you do want BIM and you do want it to work, then understand how to specify it. The basics, everyone knows the basics. There's been 90% uptake in BIM in the last 20 years. And in the same period, you have a 1% increase year on year in productivity. Everyone should be super ashamed. The software offerings are myriad, and they're growing every year, and they are really not solving the problem. So, right. You know, it's like, get real, guys. You know, you can come to nice conferences, have a nice lunch, dinner, whatever, have a few drinks after.
To solve a niche of the industry.
Well, you're not solving anything. Right. You know, really, you look at it, and that's what the figures tell you.
Right.
It's probably working for some, because you're getting 1% that somebody's doing something.
Yeah, 1% of all the people in the world. That's still decent, but not enough to change the bar.
Well, if you look at knowledgeable clients with deep pockets, mm-hmm. you can see some excellent examples. So the Sky B Sky building built in London for Sky's 25th anniversary is a perfect example of how you can get systems right, or so-called BIM systems right, and build an exceptional building in record time. But you know how they did it, how their BIM worked, how their CDEs worked, and so on? They got all the consultants to sit together in Arup's offices.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now they're all talking. They're forced to it. And like, let's communicate.
Staring
let's get,
right across
we're
going to
get it done, right? Now we're going to get it done, right? And nothing really to do with technology. There's knowledge in engineers, there's knowledge in architects. Put it together, get the information to who needs it, and you're going to get it done.
And there's no more frustrating thing working with different groups, and they're working from the same office in the same cubicle, and they don't talk to each other.
Well, they don't, because also, you know, you think standards are good, and standards are great.
Yeah.
But standards loosely applied or misapplied can create little silos of protection. So if you look at the UK, for example, and you look at the history of, let's look at the history of CAD, first of all, right? Mm-hmm. So when was CAD first used? It was used in the US to make nuclear subs,
right?
And when they used CAD to make nuclear subs, they doubled the price of a nuclear sub in the US.
Yep.
In England, we had a different experience. When we tried to use CAD, we quadrupled the price of a nuclear sub.
Right.
So, you know, there are difficulties to overcome, first of all. And I think that we're in this period of, we can look at the history of things, you know. So you look at Revit is now ubiquitous everywhere.
Yep.
But first of all, Revit was given away free, like a toy in a box of cornflakes.
And it fundamentally changed the world the way that AutoCAD did.
Well, AutoCAD, you know, was a fantastic product. And when it came out, John Walker made AutoCAD, and it was just like unbelievable. I mean, it ended up in every office, everywhere. The company in no time at all was worth $100 million. Then it leapfrogged to $400 million. And it was one of the first technology success stories. However, you have investors and you have shareholders then to be beholden to. So nothing went into R&D. They were very late to the BIM party. You had ARCHICAD, who were created by Gábor Bayor in Hungary in 82, I think, or 81, and launched with the Apple Lisa. And they had 10 years where they ruled the roost. Then you had a juggernaut like Autodesk saying, hey, we've got Revit, we're going to put it into everywhere. And people had it for years, didn't use it because everyone was in 92, everyone was still using 2D.
Uh-huh.
But when they decided to make the change to 3D, well, there it was. You got it. You got the software to do it, and it's Autodesk. And Autodesk is fantastic, right? So we're going to use that. We're going to trust what we got. And it was terrible. It remains terrible in so far as it uses a single processor. And in the modern day, you use a single processor to try and push that. You've got an American muscle car that's going to fall over every time you try and go around a corner. It has its limitations. And to cover up those limitations, what you have is an ecosystem that's built to support a lame duck.
That's right.
Now, when you have that, what are you going to do, man? You ain't going to improve anything, and you can't speak against it because, everybody who's invested, the engineers, the architects who've invested years in it, know that anything else is worse because this is the best, it's the biggest. So they're convinced that nothing else will work, and we've got to deal with it.
We'll just diversify, and we'll go into other markets, and we'll go into other channels.
Well, cool, but, at a certain point, we also know that eventually it'll fall over and something comes. Okay. So technology moves very quickly, much more quickly than it was when it came out. Mm-hmm. So I'm very optimistic that Revit can address its problems and get it onto an even footing. And I think it will. There's been an outcry, and I think there's hope there. But there are other softwares in the meantime that can do things. But that's the general state of the industry. So if you want a model, fine. But if you want to also, we talked about specifying a model.
Correct, yeah.
Right? So if you want to specify a model, you can specify it. And then you realize the technology can't do what you're specifying.
Right.
Right? Give me LOD 400. I'll pay the extra.
Yeah.
I'll pay it.
And start it from day one. Right. All the way to the end.
But it can't do it.
Yeah.
Right? You go, okay, why can't it do it? You can't put that much information into a model. It'll just fall over. Well, you can actually. A database is ubiquitous. A model is graphical, it's very light, you can make a model very light, and all you have to do is connect those two elements and you have as much information as you can shake a stick at, and you can make it work. You just can't make it with all the stuff they're selling you.
Yeah, and I think that's a good lead in to this concept for both of you is how do we take the information that we get from, let's say, the different aspects of this industry and bring them together to fundamentally understand the project as a whole, existing conditions at first. And then from that point, is it constructible? Like, is this the right property to buy? Like, I want to hear this conversation. This is a great conversation.
Great question. Yeah. Really great question.
For me, I think if I say something, then you've got something to correct it on.
Because why buy the piece of property if you don't know everything about it?
Yeah, but it's also, so you're talking about coordinated information, and there's disparate people and parties, and so how do you bring that together? But it's always given, and the client specifies, I want it all. Where do you house it? And we say that, we talk a lot about the model. A BIM model and hyper granular and all of those systems that act as one in the finished build, which federated model, single source of truth, golden thread, that is the answer, And how do you deliver that information to everyone? CDE. But what we know is that, an architectural firm will have a CDE, and the engineers will have a CDE, and the contractors have a CDE, and people have got models, and people have revisions of this and that, and it doesn't go into the same place. Therefore, it's uncommon. It's not a common data environment, and it's also if you bring all of that information in at the start and do that kind of dress rehearsal for the construction later, you're able to automate a lot of that stuff and create those workflows and do all of that stuff. And the pressure that I believe many people from this industry get put under is because when projects are won, the pressure is on everyone to just get cracking and get results. And so then we're at that point of focus where everyone should be getting design correct and securing every last bit of information, data point, whatever, that helps them do it better. They have this silly reaction where ultimately they just end up going head to site and do, like, start guessing.
Well, I mean, maybe another way of looking at it. Look, if you're running a 100-meter sprint, right?
Yep.
There you're going. You're going. You don't try and put your shoes on at the 20-meter mark.
No.
Right? So
put them right on at the beginning.
Right,
let's go.
Right, right? And that's kind of what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do that and you go, you know, this race is rigged. You know, not rigged. It's just rigged for failure, not rigged for success, not biased to help anybody win.
Right.
It's just a rigged, like you had an anarchist do it.
Yep.
Right? So yeah, you know, I've been hearing this booth all day and everyone's going, hey, it's lovely. Let's collaborate and we'll get it right. And I'm going, guys, people are very happy, clappy and optimistic because their lives are horrible because they're dealing with this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
It's really simple. It's really, really quite simple. It doesn't matter whether it's 2D or 3D. The information never gets, it's always there at the beginning and it always gets lost on the journey.
Yep.
And we have this thing, as Liam mentioned, which was a CDE. Common, it's in the name, right? Common data environment. So if your engineer's got one, your architect's got one, your client's got one, that's an uncommon data environment.
Right.
Right? That's
with a lot of challenges of inoperability between
there, but it's just uncommon. It's there, so you've broken it,
right?
You, whether they it's interoperable or not, it's broken, right? You know, it's like uncommon. Now, a common data environment stays with whoever's got it, right? With engineer, architect, right?
And who owns that data at the end?
Owns it, doesn't own it. They've got it, right?
Right.
Now, the thing is, now if an engineer is forced to use an architect's CDE. Well, his insurance and his QMS will say, well, you still got to double file it for yourself to make sure it's cool, right? So now you're double filing. Now, you're adding work, useless work into the system. If you smart contracted it or blockchained it, you could all trust that information.
Right.
But that information, that CDE should be associated to a building.
Right.
Right. So, yeah. So take that CDE. I'm building number 5 Brixton. This CDE, when at the end of the job, goes to the client, it's got all the conversations that happen along the journey, it's got everything that you need there. The model, if you have a model, is connected. If you have 2D, it's connected. Graphical, non-graphical, doesn't matter. That's your logbook. That's all your records. Everybody agrees to put their stuff on there. Everybody agrees to do that. And whosever system it is, at the end of the project, the client owns it.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the piece of it that I wanted to get into with your discussion today on the stage. And that was this idea of why is the client the most important person to any BIM set?
Yeah, it's why is your wife the most important person in your relationship? Because she calls the shots.
Right? This is pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Hey, you're spending the money, you call the shots. If you don't know what shots to call, I mean, it's on you.
Yeah, and if you are going to duplicate your efforts into the future, most clients are not going to build one building. You know, we have this situation where do you standardize and you do the same building over and over again, or do you get into a generative idea? Like, where do you go and see that going?
Every building is a prototype.
It is.
Right? So, I mean, you can have the same typology of building, a CLT building, a concrete frame build. You can do whatever suits you as a client. So you can take some of the duplication out of that, but by and large, the conditions of the site and everything else will dictate some change. To some degree, we're in an unusual business that where every building that we make, by and large, is a prototype.
Right.
You're stuck with that. So, you know, when you talk about standardization, just talk about basic rules. The information belongs to the client. The client needs to have it. It goes with the building. When the building is sold, that information goes to the building.
Right.
That's kind of it.
That's it. Yeah.
Because it's not complicated.
No. And really, at the end of the day, is if you want to get to a position where you turn that over and the client has this end in mind to essentially use it to run their facility and manage that facility, of course. That has to start with the end in mind. You can't wait halfway through the project to start that process.
No, of course. But so let's project to a world where a client understands what it is.
And what they want.
So they go, actually, I'm knowledgeable. I've done a few of these. I know what I want. I might have missed it in the beginning, but kind of long in the tooth now. I know what I need.
Yeah.
a good BIM model is a half step away from a digital twin.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and that digital twin and that asset information is valuable.
Yes.
And there will be a distinction between having that information and not. Because if you don't have that information, person buying that building goes, I know how to change this HVAC system. I know where every pipe is. I know if something, because essentially if they don't, they get a leak, they don't know where it works, they're going to rip out all the plumbing. We're going to go, we need to refit this building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's pretty basic, you know. And, I I'm a little bit angsty. I'm a little bit angsty because I've been in this industry for a long time.
Of course.
And everybody should be angsty. Everybody should be pretty upset that why aren't, really, we come here and we go, hey, we got great new technology, but it doesn't add up to a hill of beans if you're not getting the results.
And that was one of the things we've brought up multiple times in this industry. We are one of the oldest industries in the world.
Yeah, man.
But Farman's is older and they're further ahead than we are. And well, a lot of farming.
Farming.
Yeah.
Yeah, they get better results.
Yeah, they do. And so like how do we get to that point?
Here's a tough thing, right? You can't talk at people, you can't tell them, you can give them the best explanations in the world.
Mm.
That's not going to work. Mm. You know, you can really spell it out to them. What you will have is that you will have some outliers that will put the technology together, they'll use it, and they'll make more money.
Mm.
That's really, it's pretty basic. And then the clients will do, I want to do what that guy's doing. That's it. You know, you want to cut through the crap, that's what you do.
Right.
I also see it slightly differently as well.
Go on.
No. So because, you're from this, your perspective is from feeling that there hasn't been this kick after the innovation was there. And that's fair. But innovation doesn't stop. Innovation or technology advancements doesn't stop. That continues to kind of advance at an accelerating exponential rate. And so you look at AI, you look at blockchain, you look at all these things, and I see it and it's like, I'm disappointed that hypergranular BIM or BIM or whatever and CDs don't allow for the level of performance that it should actually take to improve an industry by a lot, you know, by several factors, at least a factor, whatever. But then I look at it as well and I think generative design, and I see BIM models that we create. And I look at it and they're federated and they are single source of truth and they do allow. And I think over time, how that happens, I don't know. But people, you know, the models will get to an advanced stage because technology just will make it easier and easier and easier.
Yeah.
And then when you get generative design and you say, oh, this is my plot, this is my specification, whatever. And you say, bang. And you get 100 or 1,000 variations on the theme. Mm-hmm. You can do that. And then it's like, the blockchain bit is for me, not even for Dara, like the who specified this, that, and whatever.
Right.
It's more about, you know, industry 4.0.
Yes.
What is it? It's connected smart sites, it's devices, mm-hmm. it's this sensors, drones, and robots.
But like Jared was talking about though, if we don't get to the point of what we want and it's spelled out what is needed, there's always this belief in all parties. Where do I hit? Where is the target that I'm trying to hit?
Yeah,
it does this.
But the target is ISO 19650, right?
Because it is here.
Yeah,
if you look at it.
Okay, so I don't know necessarily what those different standards look like.
Of course.
But you know, for me, ISO is international standard.
Of course.
So if you're ignoring an international standard, you know, I don't know what to say because those people aren't the people that I'm trying to find solutions for. The world advancing is what we're trying to find solutions for. It's not any individual who's, you know, stale or can't quite grasp it or whatever it is. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to sort of just go crash into that.
Here goes the pop of the bubble.
I'm going to crash into that, but not really address what you're saying.
Cool.
If you try and follow all the rules and you don't take responsibility, mm. you get a building sometimes that can tick all the boxes.
Mm.
People don't like concrete, right?
It's
got carbon in it, you know? And great. I say don't use as much concrete as you don't use it willy-nilly. There's other things. Concrete's a great medium for wonderful heating.
Mm-hmm.
And if you couple that to an air source heat pump, you're getting a COP of wonderful, right? But it's very difficult when you put standards and we're not going to do concrete and to use something effectively. Now, whose job is that? Is it the architect? Is it the MEP engineer? Is it the client? It's hard to distinguish. It's a complicated thing. I would say that the architect is really important in this. It's really important. And over the years, what we've seen is that people shrink back from their responsibility. Yeah.
They don't want to own it.
They don't want to own it. And an architect who was a generalist, if we go back 20 or 30 years, 40 years, there was not very many MEP engineers. Right. And 50 years more, you had a fireplace. And if you go back.
It's not very far. You have to go back to not have any of these things.
And you go back a little bit further and you didn't really have that many engineers. You know, you had it for a bridge or so on, but not necessarily for a house.
Right.
You know, so houses certainly in London or cubits built London from pattern books, as Paris was.
Yeah.
So you've got to bring a little bit of reality back to it and go, you know, there's some basic things, there's some generalist things that need to happen. BIM and all that is great and well. But I'll come back to the same point. When you have a developer who is trying to do something, you have to avoid the race to the bottom. You've got to stop people trying to... You have a developer. He's got his money tied up in a plot. He's got planning. At the moment he gets his planning, he is whipping everybody, go now.
Right.
But before that, he hasn't said prepare well.
No.
Because he doesn't know he's going to get planning.
No, exactly.
He said, hold, don't spend any more money in case they say no.
Right. And I want you to build it, but I'm contracting you to assist me in building it.
Right. But if you build it in the virtual, so we're in the modern era.
Yep. Everything's virtual.
You should know what it costs.
Of course.
It's like saying, hey, I'm going to order a new car.
Yeah.
Car arrives and you ordered in silver, but they go, it's 3 months later. And, but, you know, sorry, it was not silver, it's blue. And, you know, I got an extra tire that's in the trunk. And I don't have the steering wheel yet, but next week I'll send it to you. That's construction. That's
of course.
That's how it works. And it's unacceptable. It's totally unacceptable. The software offerings from companies that are putting their prices up each year and their main authoring softwares is unacceptable. Right. To keep on pushing OpenBIM and IFC, which is designed not to work other than to downstream technologies, is unacceptable. Yeah. So, you know, in a way you blame the industry. You have to blame the industry and say, we are collectively buying into this amnesia and we feel powerless against it because this seems to be the only offering there. And often decisions are made at board level. And at board level, they'll take the advice of a consultant and the consultant will say it will be sponsored by a software company and he'll say this. Now, it's a wonderful system because it's risk-free to everyone except as a whole, the whole suffers.
Right. In conclusion of this conversation,
I'm sorry if I'm a little.
No, you're good.
Yeah.
I wanted to just conclude with this statement. I feel like the next steps in this is clients have to get more engaged at the very beginning of the process. And what you're starting to see is with some of the specifications that we see in the US or other places, that the design team's not taking the time to really read through the specifications of what the contractor is trying to put in place. And that's the fundamental narrative behind the drawings.
Wow, that's an interesting thing to say.
Yeah. And then the other aspect of it is the drawings themselves are the contract document, but yet we have a three-dimensional model the drawings are made of.
Well, I mean, you said a lot there, and I think there's a lot to, again, pick apart.
Yeah.
The contractor doesn't create the specification. The specification is created upstream by the architect, the engineers, and the design team.
If I misspoke, that's what I meant.
But yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So downstream for that, that's trying to be delivered. But the problem is that all of this BIM modeling, and so if you have BIM, right, the whole idea of BIM was less coordinated. You got a model over there for MOP. You got a model over there for engineering. You got one for architecture. Stick them all together and they'll crash. So yep. You can't coordinate it. So now you've got a real problem on your hands. If you try and use teamwork with the leading softwares, guess what? It's unreliable. It's going to crash. So, you know, you've got to call it out. You want to change, you've got to call it out. I would say right now, rather than use leading BIM software, go to 2D, use it effectively, use some pretty good stuff and crack on that way. If you know how to get the best out of BIM, you will make a huge margin. You know, if you know how to, if you know your technology, if you know how to put it together, it's fantastic. I mean, I've sounded, you know, doom and gloom, but man, I put all of that information together in a model and it flows and it's wonderful. But I'm tired. And I think if people are truthful, they're tired of not being able to get the results that are clearly available.
Final thoughts?
The final thoughts is just that perhaps people do have, you know, limitation to believe whatever of a digital thing. But the point is that, and just to clarify, the building information modeling can be that graphical and non-graphical thing. There's always instruction. But it's how do you gather those instructions and that level of information to the level needed to be able to, you know, comprehensively do a job without having to kind of keep tacking back or, you know. And so for me, CDs are equally as important as a beautifully graphical BIM model, yes. You know, because ultimately you can get the same information in 2D and such. And you know, that's where there's a kicker, because it's not about modeling or anything. It's about getting your information coordinated so that you can build a building, you know, yes. That's BIM.
And most importantly, not just amongst the consultants, that information's got to travel down the line to the guy who's building it for you.
Right.
If you miss that, you've missed most of it.
Well, thank you for both joining us. I think it was a great conversation talking about the client's perspective of the industry. And thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Went right straight over my head what I just said there. What I was trying to say was, you know, the architect has
at least you know this thing.
Oh, of course, yeah. And but I think what happens is that they copy and paste.
Yeah. Cody, man, you got it. Yeah. You got it.
You know what I mean?
Like, it's proper slack. It's not slack.
We don't want to read it, and they don't want to produce it.
Yeah. You know, what we'll do, we'll deal with it if it doesn't work.
But that's where long term you have this kind of machine readable stuff, which, and the AI point, I didn't quite get to the actual punchline, which is, you know, eventually the AI will be able to create you a generative model. You know, through.
I'd love to know his response on that one.
But it will, like long term.
You think the AI would?
Neural networks have 50 lines of code. Yes.
Long term,
you feed it enough,
5 to 10 years.
Potentially sooner
if people would pull in the right direction. It's just there's not enough people,
and that's
the models I make are really hyper granular. Right, you feed that into AI, it'll spit it back at you because it knows it to. You know, I put it down. Nobody else puts it down. Screw it.
Right. Yeah.
And so the limitation.
All you've got to do is create feed for AI. Give it enough feed.
But even the feed that you're asking is still, you got to give it something.
You got to give it a feed, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And at the moment, the feed that is crap. It's like, you know, it's like proper GMO. You know, it's like.
Versus if you give it the right one, it's going to
be train it on best practice.
Yeah.
Mm. Great conversation, guys. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks, man. Thanks. And I get an apology if I was a little bit spicy.
No. That's part of it. Because, I mean, it happens out there.
Yeah, I just.
Pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.